Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Danny Parkinson. I'm back again for another episode of Gay Mormon Stories. And today I am going to interview another young man, Mark Wade from Portland. And hello, Mark.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I have heard good things about you from other Portland people that I've interacted with in the online forums. And of course, I've seen you post a lot, and so I'm excited to get to know you a little bit. Would you mind just giving me a super brief introduction? I'm going to ask you lots of questions later, but maybe just tell us what you do. And
sure. Okay, I'd love to. My name is Mark, and I am a resident here in Northeast Portland, Oregon. I've lived in the Northwest my entire life, basically, apart from missionary service and college. I studied architecture at Washington State University, and I am a recent graduate, and I am currently a home designer in just across the river from Portland, Oregon, in Southwest Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, very good then. So, you know, we have a format here at Gay Mormon Stories that we really like to do a biographical interview and start at the beginning, which is before you were born. So people are probably tired of me saying that because I will say the same thing. But what about your Mormon heritage, the background of your family?
Sure.
Fill us in a little bit on what kind of Mormon family you were born into.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I am from the get-go in the Mormon heritage scene. I have ancestry who are pioneers on both sides. I have ancestry from Danish pioneer stock, as well as from the English variety, 1847, crossing the plains into Salt Lake. So it goes pretty far back into the Mormon history, my family.
Okay, and so both your parents, both sides are Mormons way back, in other words.
Way back. Okay. Way back when.
But they somehow ended up in the Northwest.
They did. My father's side of the family actually were quite the pioneers in Washington State, and they did a good job of founding the church there. And my father served in the Vietnam War, and on his way back from the Vietnam War, he was stationed in San Diego, I believe, and there at a single adult dance, he met my mother. And after the second date, my dad proposed to my mom. They eventually moved from California back up to the Northwest.
So your mother was from down there?
Yes, my mother's parents moved from Salt Lake to San Diego to find a better life, you know. And basically had a successful painting contracting company and just lived their lives there.
Okay. But they had a quick romance. Was this because they were being typical Mormons, or was it a typical military, this is my only chance, or a combination of the two?
You know, I really couldn't tell you for sure. I mean, I think my mom just basically told me that she knew that it was the right thing to do. I think that they got caught up in the emotions of love, and so that's what they did.
Well, that's glad they did, because if it weren't for that, things might be very different for you. But anyway, so tell me just then a little bit, is there anything about your childhood that is interesting to mention? Did you just have a normal Mormon childhood, or was there anything particular that stands out as being different about your childhood?
Well, first I'd like to say, is there a normal Mormon childhood?
Well, there's the primary storybook version or something. I don't know.
Right.
Like, what you, you know, it, everyone sort of imagines a Mormon childhood should be like. So I guess I would call that the normal one that might not really exist, but.
I can say that. I can say that it was one of those childhoods that is believed to be so from the outside, but we definitely had our mountains to climb just like any other family. Yeah. My mother had a lot of trauma when she was a child, which resulted in a lot of emotional and mental illness growing up. So that was kind of difficult to deal with as a child. Having her away in hospital for months at a time was hard for myself and my younger sister, for my older siblings as well. But yeah, I think that we stuck to as much as we possibly could.
So the responsibility for raising you was going to your father and your older siblings because your mother was out of commission, you might say, for periods due to a mental illness?
Well, I would like to say that she was an excellent mother. Given the circumstances, and that she was there a lot of the time for us too. And when she was there, she took very good care of us. But there were times where she was absent because she had to.
Right.
And so, yeah, in those situations, my father would be the primary caretaker for us.
Okay. Do you remember that you had an otherwise typical Mormon experience? You attend a primary, Sunday school, you...
Yeah, totally.
Anything particular about that to point out?
Eagle Scout, Deacon's Quorum President, Teacher's Quorum President.
I'm going to get to adolescence because that's almost always relevant to any gay person's story. But let's just see if there's anything worth mentioning about your childhood.
Oh, sorry.
Some common things are, you know, just whether there was any sort of pressure about conforming to gender norms, or, you know, were you bullied as a child? Anything that a lot of gay people might experience, but not all gay people. I'm just wondering if that was part of your story.
Yeah, absolutely. Growing up from very early on, it was apparent to my mom and dad that Mark was a little bit different. For instance, when I was 6 or 7 years old, I was a unicorn for Halloween, and I also won, I think it was first prize in the ward Halloween party for that costume. Okay. So gender norms didn't really play a role there for some reason, but yeah, I was odd. I was different. Childhood, I did experience some really hard instances of bullying to the point of where in middle school I had to switch school districts. I didn't tell my parents at the time why, it just an opportunity came where I could switch with other friends and they wouldn't know about it. But yeah, there were bullying situations and it was a little bit rough.
But it sounds like if you're talking about middle school, was this just all the way along or was this just sort of sporadic?
Well, it came to fruition when puberty started happening. I had a lot of friends who were girls that I hung out with as well as guys, and the boys tended to question that a lot. And then as time wore on and I had less and less male friends, it became apparent that I was different, and I was called lots of gay slurs at that time. Okay. The school district that I was in, I have been told, I'm not sure if this is correct, but I have been told was the most racist and homophobic school district in the Portland metro area. So it was a little bit rough.
Okay. Well, then let's go into the adolescence. You know, most gay men sort of, well, everybody, not just gay men, have a sexual awakening with puberty of some sort. Would you describe how you were impacted by, did you have any awareness or any shameful feelings or things going on when those sexual feelings started happening for you?
Sure. I mean, when I started noticing that I was attracted to members of my own gender and only members of my own gender in a physical sense, I felt a great sense of shame. I felt as though it was something as dark as being a pedophile, and that was really hard. And so what I did in order to cope with that was I just kept it within myself.
So how old were you when you sort of had these kind of realizations?
I think I was about 12 or 13 years old when I realized what was happening. And so, yeah, I just kept it all in and would go out on dates with girls and pretend that nothing was going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said you were associating with being bad as a pedophile. What put that idea into your head? Where were you getting the shaming messages?
You know, I think that it was just, I don't know if it's something that I had absorbed in the church culture, but it just led me to feel like being a homosexual was just as on par with being a pedophile, that it was something so heinous that there was no escape from it, that there was absolutely no recovery from that deviance, or what I thought was a deviance.
Were you identifying yourself as being a homosexual?
You know, I kind of realized early on that it was what it was, because I had never experienced any sort of sexual inclination for a female my entire life.
Okay. So did you have enough awareness or enough education about it that that's what homosexuality meant, that it was being interested in guys as opposed to girls? I mean, was that definition commonly known among young adolescents in your community, or were you already getting information on internet, or?
You know, from very early on, I was kind of a very introverted person. And So I would find myself, even as a child, just reading encyclopedias before bed. And so when I figured that these things started happening, I decided to just go to the World Book Encyclopedia and look up homosexual. And I kind of figured it out that it is what it is.
Okay, so you did some research.
I did.
Was the information that in the source you went to more or less accurate, or was it?
Well, you know, I can't remember going back that far, unfortunately. But what I do remember is that it was from the 1980s was when this information came out. So I don't think it was entirely accurate. But I got the gist of it, that homosexuals were attracted to their own sex. And so I felt that was me. But I have to say, I felt like that it needed to be hidden. And so that's what I did.
So you really didn't tell anybody, not your parents, not anybody?
I didn't tell anyone. Even when I was found out through curiosity of looking things up online when I was a teenager, as most teenagers do, and I was questioned about it, and I still denied that I was gay.
So just a second. So you were caught. I mean, you somehow got caught by your parents. They could tell what kind of online porn you were looking at?
Yes.
Okay. So you sort of got caught big time. So how did they react to that?
Well, I could say that they were very upset and very concerned. I was terrified. And so they sat me down and talked about options for me, basically. They asked me if I was gay. I denied it. I didn't want to be gay. I didn't understand. I didn't want to deal with the implications of being gay, particularly where I lived. And
how old were you at this point?
I was probably 14, 15 years old. What ended up happening was my parents suggested that I talk to somebody about it. And I went to the family psychologist, who is LDS and somebody that I admire and respect. And so I went into therapy and I talked to him for a few months.
Okay, you're saying you admired him at the time, or just looking back, you admire that person?
I would say both.
Okay.
I'd say both.
Okay, so you went into a counseling with an LDS therapist.
I did.
And I want to ask you about that, but I just want to get some context with your parents. You have some older brothers, right?
I have one older brother.
How much older?
Oh, he's like 12 years older.
So he probably never got caught looking at porn on internet because they probably were pre-did. I'm trying to kind of put this into
I think it
perspective.
was pre-internet when
Yeah,
he
so you
graduated.
were so this was the first time parents were catching
Right.
people in your family anyway, was you. Okay, so
Shocking.
did you feel like your parents' response was sort of extremely huge, or was it sort of, oh yeah, this is what you need to do when you have kids? Was how would you rate that, the level of drama this created in your family?
Oh gosh. Well, it is a long time ago. All I can say is, to me, it was the most terrifying thing in the world. I mean, I didn't come out of my room for days. My parents pointed to examples of gay people who were attending church in a San Francisco branch that I don't know if it's still functioning, but it was a gay branch or something like that. They pointed to an example of a gay man who had some sort of calling back in the day in the church, and basically kind of wanted me to be guided in the church. And
They were sort of saying, oh, well, even if you're gay, you can still be a Mormon. Was that what they were kind of going with that?
that's kind of what it seemed like.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, that sounds relatively progressive. I mean, interesting. So, okay, but anyway, you went to a therapist, and you tell me you had a good experience. What did you come out feeling about homosexuality after that experience with a therapist, with an LDS therapist?
Well, first of all, I would have to say that I came out of that experience a little bit more calm. Although I felt like I assumed that I was going to be changed and that I would actually be heterosexual. And so during this process, I kind of felt a little bit ingenuine in the fact that we would talk about in therapy the idea that I was being sexually attracted to females, but I don't think that ever happened. It didn't happen for me. I just said things that he wanted to hear. But I have to say that I felt like I was okay just having somebody to talk to about those issues, which was a huge relief.
Okay, so even though did the therapist seem to hold out this idea that you could overcome it, or did you just invent that?
Looking back on it, I think that I invented that.
Okay.
He gave me a list of options that I could do, but he never said that it was never going to go away. And so I had high hopes that it
Okay.
would and that I would be in the church and with a wife and kids and temple marriage, the whole lot.
Yeah. So this lasted a few months. Did you have to go to your bishop? Did you have to confess? Did
Yeah,
you
I
ask?
did. I did confess to my bishop. He had asked me what type of pornography I was viewing, and I had told him, being a terrified teenager, that it was bisexual, that it was male and female, because saying just to the bishop that it was purely male on male just seemed too humiliating.
Okay.
In all honesty, I didn't want to lose the opportunity of serving a mission because I felt like that would happen. And so I said that it was bisexual in nature, which it totally wasn't. But
Okay.
I was scared. I was really
Yeah.
scared.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And
And
so
how
I.
was the bishop? How would you rate his response as being helpful or
He
shaming?
was actually okay. He said that the level of the sin severity was like a 2 out of 10, and that he would get me past it. I wasn't allowed to partake of the sacrament for a while, which really sucked for me, but I just kind of dealt with it.
Okay, but that's nice. He assigned it a number that was sort of in
He
the low
did.
range where it should be, right? Is
Right,
because yeah,
absolutely.
it's, I mean, if murder's 10, viewing pornography should definitely be down there
I would
in the
agree with
low
that.
numbers. Okay, so did he tell you had to stop masturbating or something like that?
Yes.
Okay. Did you succeed at that? I mean, was that, were
I
you?
tried. I tried really hard. I did.
And did you
I think
say,
there was a time where I went like maybe a month or two without it. But you know, I guess the teenage boys have passions and they have those desires. So you just gotta.
Yeah. Well, no, it's ubiquitous. I mean, everybody. Mm-hmm. There's hardly any teenagers who don't masturbate regularly. There's just some who talk about it and some who don't, you know. But right. Would you say that you suffered a lot of feelings of guilt then when you weren't able to? Did you feel like you had to tell your bishop every time?
I felt a lot of guilt. I did not want to face the shame of or the embarrassment of talking to the bishop about it again.
Okay.
So I did not.
Did you succeed in staying away from the internet porn?
You know, I cut it down, I could say, but did it leave completely? No.
Okay. But hopefully you got better at erasing the memory of your cache, right? So
right.
You wouldn't get caught again.
Right.
Okay. Well, interesting. So how was school for you as a teenager? You said in middle school you had an opportunity to change schools and you really wanted to because you felt like you were getting harassed too much in your
yes
in the basically with the kids you grew up with. Was that who was harassing you, or had you moved a few times in the process?
I'd only switched school districts once, but it got to the point where there was actually physical altercations. I remember riding the school bus one day and arriving to the school parking lot and finding a burning sensation in my scalp and having a hot taffy in my scalp that was poured onto me, and being called a queer bait or a faggot. And it was just very clear, being shoved a lot and, you know.
So you were feeling a substantial hostility at school. So
very.
How were you able to maneuver switching schools then?
Well, some friends of mine had been homeschooled for quite some time and they wanted to try out actually going to public school, and they were friends from my ward growing up, and so we ended up switching together, and so we all went to this new school district together, and it was my escape.
Because your parents thought it was a good idea because these were ward kids? And
absolutely. Mm-hmm. There were a lot more members of the ward who were my age in that school district rather than the school district that I was in, and so it would be a better influence.
And did that work out better for you, the new school?
I would say so, yes.
Okay. So You, after that, you don't remember bullying being as substantial?
Not as substantial. I remember being questioned a few times about my sexuality, but I just flatly denied it, and it didn't seem to be as much of an issue.
Okay.
I became very, after that experience of being in that prior school district, I kind of learned how to walk my way out of that and to not show signs, outward signs of my sexuality.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, anyone who's able, any adolescent who's able to sort of put on a better show is certainly going to try, right? To
turn it off.
Right. So, because it's much nicer not to be harassed. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you had that skill, which helped you sort of manage the situation. So what about your school experience? Were you involved in a lot of extracurricular stuff? Were you doing the favorite things for gay men, like choir and drama? Or were you doing sports? Or were you neither or both?
You know, I was terrified at doing anything with choir or drama. Okay. I really did not like sports that much either. Uh-huh. And what I ended up doing was I did things on my own. I took art classes outside of school, after school, on my own time. And that was very therapeutic for me.
Uh-huh.
It was a great way to escape and to find people that I could be comfortable around and just kind of be myself, not in the way that I could be out and say, you know, well, I like guys, you know, that never happened, but just to be with like-minded people, creative people who didn't care that I didn't play sports or didn't care that I was a Mormon, even though the teacher was Mormon herself, it just didn't matter. And so I was able to really open up and explore my creativity there as an outlet.
So this was probably where you developed your social life, was in this art classes and this scene that you found there.
Art classes, yeah. And I did have my church friends as well.
Yeah, tell me about your church life as a youth. Were you pretty involved with the local Mormons and at school?
Yeah,
was that your primary group of friends at school?
I really was. I was involved in all of Quorum presidencies growing up as a youth. I helped organize activities and events, attended seminary regularly, seminary graduate, all of those things. Campouts were a lot of fun. Eagle Scout, just the typical straight-laced Mormon youth.
And you enjoyed that experience, the youth experience at the time.
I did, yes.
So did you have trouble with depression as a teen or?
I did. You know, as soon as I started to, I've always been a very emotional person, but once the realization started kicking into gear that I was attracted to guys, then things started getting a little bit dark for me. I think that's when my depression really kicked into gear.
So did it sort of plague you your whole adolescence? Did it sort of come and go? Or?
I think it was always there in the back of my mind because my sexuality doesn't leave. It's always there. It's always in the back of my mind. I can remember instances of trying to punish myself for whenever I'd receive one of those thoughts, and not allowing myself to go out, things of that nature, just keeping myself to myself during those times, being alone.
Okay. And did you have crushes on some of your friends? Did you struggle with that at all?
Yeah, I did. I don't know if I should name names or anything like that, so I'm not going to, but a couple times I had some crushes on some friends.
Would you say it complicated your ability to have friendships because of this attraction sort of hanging in the air? Or?
I don't know about that. I kept things pretty hidden at that time, okay. So it wasn't an issue.
Yeah. Okay, so did you go to college first before your mission?
I went to community college at Clark College, home of the Penguins.
Okay.
So I took some art classes there, and it was really great. Really great. I was still straight-laced, LDS, getting ready for my mission.
So you did 1 year of community college before your mission?
I did, yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Yep. And then I was called to the England-Manchester mission.
Okay.
And so I served there, and I remember distinctly something that I found really upsetting, and that was as soon as I arrived in Manchester and met with the mission president after my training in the MTC there, he brought up the fact that I didn't have to worry about my past. And that really upset me because I was under the impression that what I had talked to my bishop about was actually very confidential. And to find out that that wasn't true kind of bummed me out.
You're saying that somehow what you'd confessed to looking at bisexual porn had been annotated?
Yes.
So had you been talking about with your bishop over the years about it, or was it really just that one time?
It was just that one time. That was kind of disheartening.
Yeah.
You figure that forgiveness,
I mean, it was nice of him to tell you were forgiven, but on the other hand, if you're really forgiven, why was it written in your record?
Right, and the confidentiality that was so important to me to try to live a righteous life that was not there.
Yeah.
That was kind of disturbing. But anyway, so I just kind of pretended like I didn't really understand what my mission president was talking about and kind of moved on with it. I really enjoyed my mission. I loved helping people and seeing them change their lives for the better was incredible to me. And Elder Wade in the mission was the guy who had probably the most care for the people in that mission.
Okay.
So he cared a lot about
you
them.
You really cared about the...
About the welfare of the people that I taught and served.
Yeah. So you liked the whole experience.
I did.
Did you struggle with the closeness that you had, you know, being all day long with the same guy? Did you ever have a crush on a companion or a district member or something like that? Did that bonding experience just turn out to be just positive for you, or was there some sort of inner conflict about that?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because my second mission companion ended up telling me that he was attracted to me. While we were companions. Okay. And I think it was the first day that we were paired up after transfers. And I thought, whoa, this is kind of shocking. Yeah. But I figured that I had two choices that I could do in order to deal with this. And one of those was that I could tell the mission president, or I could also not tell the mission president. And yeah, so I didn't feel the same way in that sense, but I decided, like, I wasn't attracted to him, but I decided that I wasn't going to tell the mission president. And he really didn't need to know, and he didn't do anything wrong. And it ended up being that he was my favorite companion, and we had a lot of success together, and we really had a deep connection with each other.
Why do you think he told you? What did he sense that they just felt so alone in his in this situation? Did he sense that maybe you were struggling with the same types of feelings, or?
You know, that very well could have been, but I don't know. I honestly can say that I didn't even delve into it too deeply with him. I just sort of laughed it off. And
so you didn't discuss that issue ever again with him?
No, but okay. That didn't mean that we didn't become close.
Yeah, no, but it's interesting that maybe that helped you bond, just the fact that even though you didn't acknowledge it back to him, that yeah, you knew that he had an issue that you had. And so, I don't know, I'm just curious if that might have helped you feel more at ease with him.
I think that's very fair assumption. I think that's how I felt too.
Yeah. And it just makes me also wonder, you know, how would it be? I mean, it must have happened in the history of missionaries that there was two companions where that happened, but they were both attracted. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I think that happened before.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, you know, since you had this experience where it was a positive thing for you, the way it turned out, do you imagine it would have been much harder if there actually had been a mutual attraction?
I think so. Yeah.
Supposition, and I suppose it's obvious that it would be hard. So I guess that's not that great of a question. But anyway, yeah, it's I haven't really heard any anecdotes about that, of that actually happening. You know, I certainly had some, you know, different intensities of relationships, you know, friendships with my different companions.
You haven't heard of companions falling in love with each other? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's this famous movie about it that's supposed to be not mm-hmm. that good, but I suppose it must have happened. I just haven't really...
It actually happened in my mission while I was serving.
It did.
Yeah, there were two really good-looking elders that fell in love with each other, and they fled the mission boundaries.
And they were a companionship?
They were a companionship, yeah.
And they decided to get up and go and leave their mission and just start living life.
They did, yeah.
Okay, so that must have been a huge scandal.
It was.
Whatever came of them, did you hear, or did you?
You know, they were both sent home, and I'm not quite sure. I friended one of them on Facebook right after my mission to see what had happened, and he ended up marrying a woman, and then he sort of disappeared off of the face of the earth, so don't really know what happened. I was a new missionary at the time, and
so it sounds like it was more traumatic than it might appear. That right. This coming out.
Maybe not so happy ending there.
Sort of more like the movie. What's the movie Latter Days, which was seemed like a realistic portrayal of how it might be to.
Was it?
Did I thought it was? Didn't you? Did you see it?
I did see it. Yeah, yeah.
I thought that the presentation of the characters, the. How they interacted with each other as missionaries was quite realistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, maybe there was some elements of it that weren't totally realistic, but I thought by and large it was actually.
Yeah, I remember when I first started dating guys, there was a guy that I had talked to that after we had been out a couple times, he had said to me, "Have you seen Latter Days?" And I hadn't, and he decided to show it to me, and I remember just being so offended by it.
Oh, really?
And that was, I think that was just because, you know, I still clung to some of those tenets of Mormonism, and I just didn't think that it was accurate at all. But looking back on it now, you know, sure, I think that the relationships between the two, I can relate.
I mean, it was a particular situation where he was falling in love with someone in the community. It wasn't another elder.
Right.
But what, you know, in that scenario, what's realistic? I mean, anything, lots of things like this have happened, not just with gay people, but straight people. Straight people are sent home from their missions on a regular basis because of doing something with a female or whatever, someone of the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. But what I found about the movie was just the way the elders interacted with each other was really quite authentic. It was obviously written by someone who had that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. But okay, that makes sense. I was forgetting the plot line and thinking that the missionaries fell in love with each other, but that wasn't the case.
Well, there's another movie where missionaries fell in love with it. I haven't seen it, but that's apparently less realistic in its portrayal, but I'm still curious. I forgot what it's called. Anyway, but let's get back to then your experience. You, just curious, did you maintain a friendship with this elder after your mission?
He kind of disappeared. And so nobody knows what really happened to him, which is kind of really sad because I would love to talk to him again.
But anyway, so you came home and it seemed like your mission was a success, both for how you felt about it and just for how it went for you. So, you know, that's nice that you could have a positive time.
Sure. I will say that I was excited to go home. I was very excited. And I have to say that during the mission as well, I kind of realized that things weren't so perfect and that hierarchy in the church was sort of weighing me down. And I saw that there were different personalities in the church and some led better than others in more successful ways than others. And that was a little disheartening for me, but
Because you were seeing how the mission leadership worked.
Exactly.
And you were seeing sort of the imperfections and how, if I'll project what happened to my mission, there was sort of a dynamic of really wanting to impress the mission president and get on his good side so he could get advancements in your positions, right?
Exactly.
And there was sort of a push or a sort of this culture of, oh, I want to make ZL, I want to make DL, and there was a status to that. And the way, you know, our particular mission president was he had sort of this old boy sort of way of interacting, and that's how you got on his good side, was you just interacted in this old boy sort of way that I was just really terrible at, right? So I sort of felt left out of this push for position thing. Is that what kind of, does that sort of sound familiar on what you experienced? Or
it does. I mean, I was a district leader for a while, and I guess that I had a little bit of an unorthodox leadership style. And so I think that my zone leaders didn't appreciate that very much. And so I kind of just went down to senior companion for the rest of the time. And I wasn't jaded by it, but I saw a glimpse of how things were working there.
Well, I think when you're 21 years old and you know, what you're describing is you're on your mission and you really had a passion for the work,
mm-hmm.
and you really had a passion for the people you were serving. And so I can see it being disheartening when what is admired and respected in your mission is not that, is something else. And when those should be the qualities that should be the most respected qualities in a missionary, right? I can easily understand why that might happen in that scenario, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as far as your belief in the church, that was holding strong and true?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Would you say you had a spiritual confirmation at some point, either before your mission or during your mission, about the truth of the church in general?
I could say that I had that feeling throughout my mission. I felt that prior to my mission as well. I did the kneeling down and praying to know before I left, and I felt like I had a confirmation in my heart that it was true. And so I went with that.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so what happened when you got home then?
Well, when I got home, I went back to school.
At the same place?
I did. I went back to the community college, and I started going to the young single adults ward there, and I landed a job as a home designer. Was just enjoying my life as well as I could. Uh-huh. But it was at that point in time where I realized, okay, game's kind of over now. I can't keep this up of trying to go out on dates with girls and not being attracted to them. And
so you were trying to date. You were trying to.
I was. Okay. I was trying to keep up the charade, I guess. And
did you enter into any sort of longer term dating relationships or? Or you date?
Not really. I mean,
it was just always a date or two kind of thing. Or
yeah, and then I would form kind of close friendships with one or two girls, and then just be too scared to let anything happen when the situation would allow itself.
Uh huh.
And so that was really difficult. Yeah, but at that time, I didn't even realize, but I was losing a lot of weight, a lot of weight. And my depression was getting more and more significant,
uh-huh.
a larger acting force in my life.
Were you being treated for it? Were you seeing someone?
Well, it's funny because it didn't seem like anybody noticed it. I didn't notice it myself. I knew that the depression was there, but I wasn't being treated for that. And it took a really good friend of mine to just say one day, Mark, you look like crap. And then I realized that what I was doing. And what I was doing was I was working long hours at a job, and I felt completely out of control because of my orientation.
Uh-huh.
And not being able to control it and not being physically attracted to female. And so I used working 10 to 12 hour days as a reason to not have time to eat. And going throughout a whole day without eating seemed to equate to my feeling successful and valuable, too valuable to make time even to receive sustenance. And so
yeah,
I dropped a lot of weight. With that came panic attacks and anxiety and a huge depression. And it ended up being that I dropped 40 pounds in 2 months. It was severe and ended up in the emergency room a couple of times because of my panic attacks and just so many health problems from not eating. I remember one time in particular that I went into the ER and the doctor that I was seeing asked me if I had been having sex with guys, and I hadn't. I was still trying to date women.
Uh-huh.
And I remember being so offended by that because I knew that what he meant by that was I HIV positive? I basically looked like an AIDS patient at that time. I was really gaunt, skeletal, basically. That was really difficult.
Yeah.
It was a difficult time. This friend that I had mentioned previously took it upon himself to get me back on track. He helped me with giving me a lot of knowledge as to what sort of medications I should be taking, helping me with dietary supplements in order to gain my weight back. And I moved in with him.
Did you get on an antidepressant then?
I did. I got on a couple different antidepressants throughout that time, you know, changing medications to find the right one. And
okay, so you moved in with this friend.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he was being a super support at the time.
Right, right.
Okay.
Then I came out of it. I mean, I was to the point to where I would feel physically ill every day, waking up, feeling like I had the flu. My body was going into ketosis. It was really bad, bad breath. My hair would fall out in the shower. I was just bones. It was really, really awful. Yeah. But I moved out, moved in with him, and I had the medication. I loved Xanax at that time. It was a godsend.
Okay.
And I started gaining weight.
So you moved, you had been living with your folks still?
I was. And you know, the weird thing about that for me was that I felt so isolated at that time. And nobody, none of my family members said anything when I was losing all this weight. It just kind of didn't come up.
Yeah.
And so it took somebody from the outside, outside of that circle to tell me. Okay. So I thought that was interesting. Whatever. Yeah, so I started eating more, and I started going out on dates with girls, and life seemed all right. And so I decided that I was going to go full on with my studies, and I was going to pursue architecture and go to a full-fledged university and make it count.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, my friend who had basically taken care of me was also going through some issues emotionally and mentally. And so it was kind of a difficult strain. And so we were a little bit separated at that time while we were living together, just because we were dealing with our own issues. And that was hard to lose that in my life. And at that time, I had never had a romantic sort of mutual interaction with somebody. And so I ended up meeting somebody online and having an experience there with another man.
So you kind of decided to explore.
I did. It was basically, looking back on it now, I couldn't deal with it anymore. I couldn't deal with being alone. That was the scariest thing to me to deal with. That's what threw me into my anxiety in the first place, was that I realized that I was going to live the rest of my life alone in the church, and that I would just have to accept that. But it hurt too much, and It almost cost me my life with losing all that weight. And so I decided, after I had regained my health, that, you know, I was feeling alone and I really needed that intimacy with somebody. And so I met somebody and
But let's talk a little bit more about what went into that decision. Cause
sure.
Was it sort of like, I just need to try this out? Or was it a real coming out for you in your mind that it was time to start exploring this? Or how were you framing that? Or were you just like, did it on a whim one evening kind of thing?
I don't think you do that on a whim.
Well, you don't, but you might if you're close to being ready, you know, and then just something might line up in the stars one day, you know?
I think it was something that built over time. And I really, I was curious and sort of exploring, but when you feel that alone, really things get amped up and you really feel like you need that interaction. And so,
you had made this recovery, but mm-hmm. you found yourself isolated from your family. You found yourself isolated from this friend who had helped you sort of right. make that recovery. And so you were seeing how bad it could get. And you kind of were seeing that the isolation was going to drive you there again. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Correct. And so I didn't want to be alone anymore.
And you weren't getting the satisfying friendships at church, and it wasn't working with the girls. And so looking like a dead end to try to stay on the route the church kind of wanted you to be on?
It did. That was painful for me.
Did you, when you made that decision to go online, was it also a decision about the church, or was it sort of a postponing of that? Or
I didn't want to let it go. And so, you know, I was still a Mormon, but I was going to experience some romance because I had never in my entire life had that. Okay. That was important to me. I realized that being alone was a dead end too, and that was just too much hurt. And I don't think that I could survive being alone.
Okay. So how did it go then? So you started, you went online, and that's sort of a normal way to you know, get your feet wet. So,
right.
Yeah. So tell me about how things went for you.
I really liked this person. And so I went over to his house and he was very kind. And, you know, I was not very well versed in the gay quote scene.
Yeah.
So we basically had romance and then that was it. And we kept in touch after I went to school. But, you know, as far as like a relationship, I wasn't ready for that as much as I wanted that. And I don't think that this person felt the same way. And so that was a little disheartening, but I was still grateful that I had that experience.
Uh-huh.
It had actually meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
As weird as that sounds, but to actually have romance and a deeper connection with somebody, a physical connection, was really important. That's what happened.
Okay. So that... was that a realization for you or a confirmation anyway that
absolutely
that this is what you might need in life?
Absolutely. I realized that I felt so much better. As strange as that sounds, I felt better. I didn't feel guilt for doing that. I just felt a sense of relief that I was actually wanted. So, yeah, big sigh of relief.
Okay, so you know, this sort of opened your eyes up to some possibilities then as far as what it meant to be, at least be with somebody, be dating someone or having a romance. So what followed from there then?
I went to WSU and Where's that? Washington State University over across the Cascade Mountains in eastern Spokane. Washington.
Okay.
Near Spokane, like an hour and a half south of Spokane.
Okay.
It's 10 minutes from the Idaho border.
Right.
The sticks. I went to WSU and I started studying architecture and I really loved it. But I also loved the fact that I wasn't surrounded by the Mormon community so much. They have a couple single wards there, and I attended a few times, but in all honesty, I felt like it was a hard place to be, you know, as single wards don't really, they aren't that helpful for a lot of gay people. And so I just felt like I'm just going to focus on my studies, and I'll just put this on the side for right now.
So you started taking some distance, at least from participating in the church.
I did.
You went off to school. Okay.
I did. I still believed. I believed in the church when I started, and I just fell even more in love with architecture at that point.
Okay. So you were already accepted into the architecture program based on your prerequisites at the community college?
No, I had to take a couple other prerequisites, but I was allowed to take the studio courses and, then after your first year, then you're allowed to apply for the program. And
okay.
I was accepted, and that was really great.
Okay. So while you were at school, did you get involved in anything gay there, such as the student union or the gay lesbian student organizations? Or?
You know, I didn't know how I felt about those things. I came from a very conservative background, and so I didn't want to be seen or heard in those communities,
okay,
which is a real shame. But I was still very closeted up until my senior year. I didn't tell anybody apart from the few dates that I went out with guys on.
Okay, so once in a while you would go online again and that's how
sure.
you... So you did a little bit of dating, a small amount in those years until you decided to come out.
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
So what made you decide to come out in a bigger way then?
That would have to be the... Well, I'll have to say that during Proposition 8, that was really not a great time for me. I decided one Sunday that I would attend the YSA ward. And then that evening they had a fireside that was about Proposition 8 and how important it was to help the cause to pass Proposition 8. And I remember feeling absolutely sick to my stomach. And so I just knew, you know what, this just cannot work for me. I've had other confirmations like that, this isn't working. But this one felt particularly strong, that the church doesn't really want me for who I am. And so I decided that I wasn't going to go back. And so I didn't.
Okay, so Proposition 8 really provoked you, really separating sort of emotionally from your attachment to being part of the church.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I still believed in God and Jesus and all that stuff, but it was too painful. And I honestly did not feel safe. When Proposition 8 happened, I stopped feeling physically safe at a ward building. And so I decided that it was in my best interest to look after myself.
Was that because of the increase in rhetoric against gay people going on at the time, or was it because just knowing that your church was fighting against your rights, or both?
It was the increased rhetoric, the blatantly untrue statements about me. It just really, hurt me. I can't remember what it was exactly. The 10 things that the church promoted during the Proposition 8 campaign? Was it 10? And I can't remember what they were, but I remember being really upset by the campaign.
Yeah.
Because it just wasn't true. And so I took a back seat, and I wasn't going to go back to the church. Okay. I just kept on with my life for another 2 years. And, you know, I was online both in Pullman, Washington, and in Portland, Oregon. And Portland became sort of an escape for me.
You mean when you'd go home to visit?
Yeah. And then it was there that I would make friends with gay people and form relationships with gay people. And so that was my escape.
Okay. So it was a little bit gradual over those 2 years that your attachment to the church decreased. Well, was sort of, you started to feel really extruded from the church, really spit out from the church like most of us did. But this also corresponded with your being able to accept or to be more active about pursuing your being part of the gay community.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And man, it was great. It was really great. And so finally, October 2010 came around, and it was conference time, and I was still listening to conference online, and Elder Packer said something that I knew for myself just wasn't true. And that was the statement that, or the question, that why would God create gay people? And that he would never cause so much pain to someone. He would never put someone through that, basically, was what he was saying.
Why would God do that to anybody?
Why would God do that to anybody?
So obviously he didn't. That was his his logic. But
and so I just didn't
our
exist.
Our logic is why would God have a church do this to anybody? But anyway.
Yeah, precisely. And so at that point, I knew that I couldn't hold it in any longer. I needed to tell somebody. I needed to tell my family. And so what I ended up doing was I wrote an email to my father. I said, you know, I don't want you to tell my mother right now, but, you know, I'm gay. And there's absolutely nothing that I can do to change that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with me. I'm just, it's who I am. I just want to be myself. And I'm having a really hard time with the church. And so I sent that email out. And my father and I aren't particularly close. It's just the way that it is. And so I was too scared to open up the response from him. And so I had a friend of mine open it and read it for me. And I remember a sense of relief, but also, you know, I was a little bit saddened by his response. I think that members of the church can tend to think that they're helping when in fact the language is actually quite harmful and hurtful. So he expressed his love for me and that he cared about me very much. But also he mentioned that this was something that it's abnormal. Who I was abnormal, and that I was like someone who was born without arms or legs. And so that was kind of hard to, yeah, you know, like incomplete. So that was really hard to hear.
So did you actually end up reading the letter, or did you, your friend just told my, you that my friend more or less what it said?
My friend read it to me aloud, and then I went back and read it myself, and I was saddened by what he was saying, because I'm not abnormal, and I feel like I'm a pretty decent person. And you know, although that wasn't questioned, that I was a decent person, it came off that I wasn't. I wasn't complete. I ended up like getting involved in the Mormon Stories podcasts and reading and listening to those. That's where I started getting in touch with people like Carolyn Pearson, who wrote No More Goodbyes and Goodbye, I Love You, and Joanna Brooks, and John Dolan. But yeah, so I started getting involved with them and emailing them personally, messaging them on Facebook, basically telling my story. And that was the first time, really, that I felt true acceptance from an adult for who I was completely, which was huge for me.
And so these Joanna and Carolyn and John and people like that were responding to you and, you know, taking the time to actually answer your mails and stuff. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool. So, the first time that I actually felt complete acceptance and that I was like a whole person. And prior to that, I'd never really felt that. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when I started getting involved in the community and the Mormon Stories podcast community. And yeah.
Okay. Here we are. Well, so you finished up a school. You said you came out more the last year at school. Did you get a little bit involved more up there in some of the LGBT stuff, or it was more or less when you got back to Portland?
Portland was my haven. And so I would go to an odd drag show or two, or I started finally like hanging out with my gay friends in public.
Uh-huh.
Which is really sad, but that's what happened. I then ended up telling my mom a few months later.
Uh-huh.
And she took it a little bit hard. She expressed her love for me, but also there were some harmful things that she had said to me that hurtful things that she didn't even really consider were hurtful. You know, things that are in the Mormon lexicon that just people don't even realize what they're saying when they say it. Like words like love the sinner, hate the sin. You know, that just seems to roll off the tongue so well, but they don't really realize that, like, for me, gay is not a sin, it's who I am. And so that was really difficult. And there was a lot of frustration and anger from her that with my sexual orientation.
Yeah.
And so from there, from telling her, she and I were talking on our way to my brother's house and about it, and she was very upset. And she ended up just sort of yelling it out to my brother that I was gay when we got there to his house. And so then he knew, and the acceptance just wasn't there from him either. And that really is the hardest part, is to not have that acceptance as much as you'd like from your family. Right. My mom has been wonderful in some respects. When the referendum in Washington State came up for marriage equality, she actually voted on my behalf.
So she voted for gay marriage or same-sex marriage.
She did.
Out of camaraderie, out of solidarity with you, even though she might not have otherwise.
Right.
Yeah, that's nice.
It was really huge for me.
Yeah.
It took a lot of guts, particularly when my father did not feel the same way.
Yeah.
At all. And when the members of her ward seemed to be so politically active about it. Yeah, that took a lot of guts. So I commend her for that.
Yeah.
And it's been really great because I've been able to talk to her one-on-one about these issues. And it's hard. It's hard when you're in two different realms, you know. She has her LDS world that she lives in, and I'm kind of pushed outside of that.
Yeah.
And so to talk about that has been helpful, but there's been a lot of back and forth with changing opinion as to whether or not, you know, I deserve to be married. So that's been really difficult.
Yeah. Do you find, the way I sort of sum it up with my Mormon family, it doesn't sound very similar to yours actually, but
right.
I have this, the way I describe how my family sees me is they see me as a two-dimensional person. They don't really, I'm sort of a caricature. They can't even fathom somehow how I could be a complete person outside of the church or as a gay person or whatever that's not fitting them. So that's obviously been a big barrier to getting understanding from them, even though in a lot of ways they've been very generous towards me and especially my father reaching out, you know, on a regular basis in a regular way. And so does that resonate with you at all? What I'm describing, that it's hard for them to see the completeness of your life because they can't imagine it being complete.
I see some similarities in that. I think that my mom in particular has actually taken the time to be much more open about it, whereas other family members, my sisters are actually okay, are fine with who I am. My Good. Father and my older brother have taken it really hard and have said some pretty misunderstood things, you know.
Yeah.
Which is hard. It's really hard. But my mom and I are very close, and so she can see that I am a complete person.
Okay. But
my dad and my brother, not so much. It's kind of hard.
Has it evolved to the point where you can actually tell her what's going on? Like you're seeing someone, you know, okay, and she can sort of feel glad for you if it's going well in a relationship kind of thing?
I'd like to think that she does.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm unsure if she feels that way. I don't know, to be honest. But the fact that I'm in a relationship now is really great for me. And I really want them to be happy for me. I hope that they can be someday, you know?
Yeah.
And that they can see it as something just as pleasing as, you know, my siblings' relationships with their heterosexual partners, you know?
Yeah.
They should just be just as happy. Yeah. I would like that. But
okay. So anyway, you got through school, I guess, mainly with your passion through architecture. You moved back to Portland. It's been, what, a few years now that you're back in Portland? And
it's been a year.
Oh, just a year.
Yeah, just a year.
Okay, so you've had a year. You're actually in a relationship now. So to me, it sounds like you, even though it seemed like it took a long time to get there, I'd say that that's not fast, but that compared to a lot of people, you didn't have to wait that long to find someone if you're in a nice relationship now. So how long you've been seeing each other?
We've been seeing each other for 5 months now.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you've had a while to... Well, good. I'm really glad to hear that. And you're working now as an architect.
Well, not an architect yet. I still have to get my master's.
Okay.
So I'm working at the same home design firm that I started pre-college, actually.
Uh-huh.
Which is great.
Are you planning on going back to school then?
I am.
Are you going to be able to do that there in Oregon? I mean, in Portland, or are you going to have to move away again?
It's a possibility. Uh-huh. I'm looking at other options too. I'm not opposed to moving and experiencing something new too.
Okay.
So we'll just see. I just have to get my portfolio together. And...
Okay. Well, is there something important we missed about the evolution of, you know, becoming an out gay man and your family, dealing with your family? Is there...
I mean, I just have stories.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just the misinformation that I had to deal with, you know, going, I mean, we're talking like doctrine taught by things in the miracle of forgiveness, you know, that kind of level of orthodoxy that is hurtful and damaging.
Point is that you're hearing these same sort of things that we've all heard that are really damaging from the miracle of forgiveness, things Boyd K. Packer has said, right. And that when they come to you at this point in the game, it is damaging. And it's in a way, you know, I don't know about you, but me personally, I also see it as a disrespect for my religious beliefs when they throw Mormonism at me, when don't consider myself a believer anymore, that I've got a spirituality that's separate from that. And so if someone's calling me a sinner from a point of view that I don't even buy into anymore, I don't want to say that as a way of criticizing yours or my relatives. Right. I want to say that as a way of criticizing Mormons, because that's what they do. It's not all Mormons, but it's a lot of them that they can't sort of allow you to define your own morality and your own spiritual path and judge you by your own, you know, they insist on judging you by a system you don't believe in. You know, I'm also not obeying a lot of Muslim rules, but, you know, and they probably don't like that, but they don't care about me. But I mean, it's natural, but it's a really Mormon phenomena that really is alienating. It really took me a long time to sort of get where I didn't care, you know, that I knew that they were just judging me all the time and just assuming I had no spiritual life whatsoever. And
right.
So it was just part of that same thing, part of this two-dimensional way that, you know, and I, like I say, I'm projecting what I'm assuming based on, of course, on good information, because I know how they talked about my other family members who were inactive but it's not terribly affirming. It doesn't make it easy to have real connections and to really talk about my life. I mean, it's what kind of a friendship is it when they can't know the most basic things about my life because they can't even fathom it or understand it or take the time to ask me, you know, what my experience is like, because they're either afraid to or don't know what to ask. I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my father implemented the no gayness rule around him, so I'm not even really allowed to discuss it with him. And so that basically erases all conversation, because it's just who I am. And it's with me all the time. You can't mute it. It's just there.
So he's missing out on having a relationship with his son at this point.
Yeah.
And you're missing out on having a relationship with your father.
That's true.
And why does it have to be that way? I mean, who said that a Mormon has to not engage with another human being because they're gay, you know? That,
right. Well,
that you can't talk about it, that you somehow by being loving and engage with that person is wrong because it might mean you're approving of them, which makes me appreciate your mother, you know, that she did do that vote, because that was a big statement. That was really saying, you know, I'm going to really go out on a limb with my beliefs in support of my son. And so I
right.
That in that context of the, if that's how the other members of your family are, that it does make it even seem more of a bigger gesture.
It really means a lot to me.
Yeah.
that I actually, that I have at least that piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's hard because it's what I'm dealing with right now, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, maybe, you know, maybe we'll do a little update to this podcast at some point. And when you've had more time to iron things out, have you been able to send your father or your brother to the Mormons and Gay website?
You know, I have mixed feelings about the Mormons and Gay website, actually. But as that's well, dude, yeah. just me.
No, it's not just you.
Yeah. I remember when I first came out, I remember sharing with my father a lot of the Carolyn Pearson, her podcast series on Mormon stories, and also Bill Bradshaw. He's very rational and scientifically based in his thinking, coming from an engineer background. And so Bill Bradshaw, I thought would help.
Yeah.
My mom has been, but he, you know, I'm not even sure if he looked at that information or chose to discard it. Yeah. My mom listens to all of that stuff. She read Carolyn's books and she seems on board. And it's just, I really feel like she wants it to be okay with me in the church. She wants me to be accepted. I think that she's terrified of what the consequences would be if she were to publicly proclaim her support for me and for my rights. You know, this is just conjecture, but that's the appearance from what she has told me. That's how I feel, that she wants me to be seen as being equal like everybody else, but she's really scared. I think she's scared of being disciplined by the church, and my father is really embarrassed by the whole thing. And so she feels the need to respect his wishes too. And okay. So it's hard.
Yeah.
I keep saying that.
Well, I'm glad you're moving forward just the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm glad you have at least a couple of sisters and a mother who can at least, you know, maintain a familial relationship where you can at least be yourself. I'd like to just spend a little time just talking about two things. You know, what do you hope for yourself in a couple of realms, which is what do you hope for as far as a spiritual life then? What's your religious beliefs today, and where would you like to see your spirituality go in the future, given the church as it is and given your beliefs as they are now?
Oh, that's a good question. That's something that I really need to spend a little bit more time on focusing that part of my life right now. I will say this, that given the things that had happened, particularly with Proposition 8, that's kind of when I found myself falling outside of Mormonism. I realized that I just did not belong. As much as they mean well and they try to help me out to stay in that, you know, it just can't work.
Did other elements of your testimony unravel after that? Did you find other things that no longer worked for you too, that might make it harder to go back if for some miracle they suddenly became progressive on gay issues? Or,
you know, I find myself, I was asked the definition of what I thought God was maybe a year ago. And the best answer that I could come up with was, God is the good that we do to each other. And I feel really comfortable with just leaving it at that.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I feel like recently I've just kind of been in sort of recovery mode, looking after myself, but also I feel like my spirituality is based on helping others in similar situations. And so it's been really good just to be able to talk with people, to talk with friends about, and just opening up And for now, that's all that I can muster. But I'd like to get a little bit more involved in approaching the sacred nature of my life. Maybe not in religion per se, but just finding the peace that's near me. And I feel absolutely comfortable and fulfilled in that sort of notion. And with religion in general, I just can't fall into that box.
And just a question then, what's your perspective on the spiritual confirmation that you felt earlier than in your life, before and during your mission? How do you see that now?
How I see that now is that, you know, I have learned that emotions can really wrap you up. And I think that confirmations are great. I think that confirmations come from within yourself. Everybody, or a lot of people, get confirmations, no matter what their belief. And I think that that's great. And so I just think that I'm on a life journey, and I'm going to get confirmations about different things from other people. And mine don't necessarily have to do with Mormonism. And I don't adhere to the confirmations that I have felt before.
You've reinterpreted them maybe, or?
I have. I you know, being a little bit more open to the idea that they're probably scientific reasonings for having those emotions or those feelings, emotionally based things, rather than an actual message teleported from a being. So I don't really feel I don't believe that notion anymore. And I think that that's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And I really just, it's hard because I feel like in order to reach out to other Latter-day Saints about my experience and to tell them that I no longer believe as strictly as they do, that it negates my opinion entirely. And that's kind of hurtful, you know. It kind of negates my situation and my life story. But, you know, there are other LGBT Mormons who believe, and, you know, who are okay with themselves too, and, you know, have their own life partners and whatever. And there's allies out there who know for themselves that gay people are just great. And so, yeah, it works both ways. I mean, a lesson that I've learned is just to learn from everybody.
Yeah. And you're still drawn to... You're drawn at least to the online communities, I call them the fringe Mormon communities, or maybe the LGBT. Is that kind of feeling a part of the whole that leaving Mormonism left, do you think?
Yeah.
Or what's your, I mean, I'm drawn there too, so I'm just curious what do you feel it is that draws you into at least discussing Mormonism, but in a different way?
Absolutely. I think that the communities have been helpful for me to be in touch with the sacred, but in a new way, in a way that protects people that maybe were not so welcome in my prior arrangement, Mormonism.
Yeah.
So that's been really helpful for me to both, be comforted and to also have the ability to comfort other people too in those communities, and to realize that I'm not the only one out in Portland, Oregon, all by himself.
Well, there's some great allies in Portland, and I really like the way you can assume that there won't be homophobia, and then not just the LGBT related communities, but some of the other fringe communities. That, you know, you have a little bit more liberal Mormon mindset, and among that group, you can assume support for gay issues, and that's really nice. It's really welcoming to have a group of Mormons like that. And maybe if they'd been around when I was 25, I might have sort of maintained more connection over the years with Mormonism, even if I wasn't participating.
So right. Yeah, the community's great. I had the opportunity to march with the Mormons for Marriage Equality last year in the Portland Pride Parade for my very first time. And I'll be marching with them this year.
Fantastic.
Actually, this Sunday. So I'm really excited. And actually, hopefully I'll be getting some friends to join in. People who have since come out and shown me their support. Like somebody even from my home ward who actually thinks, you know, that I deserve the same treatment as everybody else. So it's just really great. It's really great.
Well, let's get marriage equality to Oregon.
Let's do it. 2014.
Yeah. Well, let's just maybe tie things up by letting you tell me what you want out of life. What are some of your goals, some of your dreams that you want out of life, that you want out of love? Where do you see yourself in 50 years when you're 70 something? And you know, what would you like to have done by then? I mean, obviously you'll have plenty of time to change your mind, but just at this moment in time, what would you really like out of life?
Yeah, at this moment in time, when I'm 80 years old, I would like to think that I had lived an accomplished life as an architect, as a husband, as a father, as a dreamer, and as a visionary. I think that would be fantastic. And to have had a good life with my family, too, would be absolutely wonderful.
So you want children. You want to be a father.
Yeah, I think that would be really great. What was it? I was on a study abroad tour this last summer, checking out all the modern architecture with a studio professor of mine who I admired so greatly. And she really surprised me during that trip. We had the opportunity to room together and get pretty close. And she said to me, "You know, Mark, the greatest thing that I've ever accomplished in my life was having children." And that really surprised me, coming from an academic who is very successful with her life. And she said, that is something that has brought me the most happiness in my life. So that's something that I'd definitely like to explore when the time is right, if I'm able to do it. So hopefully we can get there.
Yeah. But you see it as being a realistic thing to aspire to.
I would like to think it's realistic. And so I'm just going to hope for the best and live my life in a way that would allow that door to be opened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting that the gay men your age, that I'd call that a common aspiration that might be different than my generation. It existed in my generation, but I think now you're seeing so many examples of that, high profile examples, and I think people are realizing that it's possible, and there's no longer, you know, it's no longer as easy. It won't accidentally happen.
Right.
But it is definitely something people are doing, and so you really have more options than people did a generation ago. So I think, you know, that's heartening for someone like me to see that young people today are feeling like they can aspire to that. And it's actually a realistic aspiration.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel really thankful for the out and loud gays who came before me, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas before I was a little bit petrified of out and proud gay people. I am so happy that
they laid the groundwork for you.
Yeah.
Well, it's your job to take it to the next level and really, you know, do your part to make sure that it really, that you really are taking advantage of what the prior generation did for you.
Okay, let's do it.
I even have to thank the prior generation. I benefited so much. I consider myself maybe the first generation of people who could really have a nice life as a gay person. And a lot of people my age did not have a nice life. So in my generation, it wasn't guaranteed, but at least it was available to a few people, including me. So I'm one of the lucky ones. But I want it to be so it's no longer, you know, that every gay person has perfect access to a nice life, you know, or just at least as much as the straight people around them. So,
right.
So we're getting closer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, it's exciting times and exciting to see changes happen before your eyes. And I really hope that you get to have it all, including full acceptance by all of your family.
Yeah, I would love that.
We're not sure if that'll happen or not, but
we can hope.
It might not be full acceptance, but my guess is that even the most resistant members of your family will make progress on the issue. So I'm optimistic. It may not be as much as you'd like, but I suspect they'll come closer to being around anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just want to stress and make clear that I am so much happier. I'm just so much happier now than when I was being closeted and afraid.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how great it is to actually be dating and to have that intimacy in my life. It's just really great. It's been such a blessing. I'm excited about the frontier and what's on the horizon for me. So, especially with that being a reality, which I only could have dreamed of back in the day.
Yeah. Well, you weren't allowed that dream. And so that was part of the depression. Besides being to hide who you were, you also weren't allowing yourself a dream that appealed to you.
Being alone was the cause.
Yeah.
That was definitely my reason.
Yeah.
For being so anxious.
Yeah. Well, you might have times again in your future where you'll be alone, but
yeah,
there'll be a difference, and I hope that the difference makes you more successful with it. That right. If you are alone, that you have a dream that you can that you can reach, that there's really nothing. You know, there's barriers to you and your dreams, but they're surmountable barriers. And
absolutely. Most
people, and I, like I say, we haven't really talked about your current relationship. I really hope it's the one and only, and I really hope it works out great for you. But even if it's not, you're young, it will come your way. And so even if you go through another period of loneliness, of being alone, you know, you're building your support, you have a dream, you have a vision that's reachable.
Absolutely. What I mean to say is the reality is there that I can have intimacy and a relationship with somebody.
Yeah.
So now that that's in my life, I have less of a reason to be anxious.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping for you that it works out with this one. I've seen you guys post pictures online and you look like a super nice couple, but two good looking guys. So that's not the best criteria to base things on, but it's but it's certainly, like I say, you look
it's
like
a little important in gay world, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's probably important when you're 21 so or 25 or I don't quite know how old you are. How old are you?
I'm 29 actually.
Oh, you're 29. Okay. I'm a little bit older. Yeah, so you know, you've got to be attracted to get the thing going, but yeah, hopefully it's other things that keep it going later, but you do make a nice to compare the two of you. So
thank you.
Anyway, well, I've sure enjoyed this conversation. It's been delightful to interview you. And I think that you've shared a lot of things that are in a ways universal to gay Mormons that I think a lot of people are going to identify with what you went through on your journey. And so I think it's going to be helpful for people to hear that and to hear that you can come out of it and to hear your testimony that you're much happier when you really accept who you are and really take that as your reality. I mean, different people make different decisions about how they deal with it, but certainly accepting that about yourself and being honest with yourself is the A1 most important step. So,
right. And yeah, thank you for the opportunity to have me speak and share my story with the online world.
Yeah. Well, I hope lots of people hear it.
It's therapeutic to me, and I just want to leave it out there for anybody who's heard my story and feel like they need anybody to talk to, that I'm here. I mean, you can just look me up on Facebook and send a message. And
well, that's generous of you. Yeah. Well, I suspect someone will, if you put it out there, that you'd be willing to talk to someone, because I know once wild, people have to reach out to someone online because they just don't know how to, they don't have anyone in their circle who could possibly relate to. So I encourage, if you're out there listening, to take Mark on his offer to be a listening ear if you're struggling with some of this stuff. So
thank you.
Okay, well then, very good then, Mark. I wish you luck in your further pursuit of your career path. I wish you luck with your relationship, and I wish you luck with your other elements of your development and your life, and I'll be excited to hear how things unfold for you as they progress. So you got to promise to keep me posted on all that stuff, and you got to promise to go out for a postum with me at the Starbucks when I'm in Portland.
Oh man, come quick. Let's do it.
Well, you'll have to convince Starbucks to start serving postum to all them Mormons.
You can't go to Starbucks in Portland. Come on.
Oh, that's true.
You can't. I'll take you to some great coffee shops.
Okay. Ones that have postum?
Yeah, we can do that.
Do you even know what, are you even old enough to know what postum is?
I know what postum is.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had postum on my mission. It's great.
Okay. Well, that's my Mormon copy. So, okay. Well, it's been super nice talking to you. And so I appreciate it. And I will say goodbye to the audience. And thanks for listening. And please join us next time. And please drop us some comments if you have questions for Mark. I think he'd be happy to answer them either at the blog site for this podcast or at the forums. So anyway, have a good day.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see this podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation, again at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. Music for this podcast was donated by George Parkinson and Kelly Clark Parkinson.
stars.